If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on right beside me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the right beside me. Yeah, walking on the right beside me. Running down with life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the right beside me. Yeah, walking on the right beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a far and dark key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on altrighttv.com or white. ResistanceRadio.com. You can reach us through either portal, and lots more news and views for our people. I'd like to thank Linda for sending this my way. May not be there's much been much comment and criticism about the tactics of the Minneapolis police in trying to get control of this this Negro during the arrest last week, the one that has set off all these demonstrations and so on. It's interesting where this technique seems to have originated, and you're probably not going to see much of this in the mainstream press, and this is about George Floyd. The Minneapolis police were trained by the Israeli police, who often use the knee-on-the-neck restraint. Over 100 Minnesota law enforcement officers attended a 2012 conference organized by the Israeli consulate, in which Israeli police trained them. Israeli forces often use the knee-on-the-neck restraint on Palestinians. Meanwhile, Congress is poised to pass a bipartisan $38 billion aid package to Israel. Now, Israel is a first world country. Why the United States or the American taxpayers should be supporting it is a complete mystery. Well, actually, it's not a mystery at all. The Israeli lobby have virtually bought the American Congress through their control of the media and their ability to blacken the name of any politician who crosses them. But what a significant Jewish lobby control of the mass media means that if they label you as, well, you know, anti-Semite, you are going to be pilloried and your days may well be numbered. And this is from the UK Morning Star. Officers from the U.S. police force responsible for the killing of George Floyd received training in restraint techniques and terror and anti-terror tactics from Israeli law enforcement officers. Mr. Floyd's death in custody last Monday, the latest in a succession of police killings in some cases, out-of-control Negroes, has sparked continuing protests and rioting. At least 100 Minnesota police officers attended the 2012 conference hosted by the Israeli consulate in Chicago, the second time such an event has been held. There they learned the violent techniques used by Israeli forces as they terrorized the occupied Palestinian territories under the guise of security operations. The so-called counterterrorism training conference in Minneapolis was jointly hosted by the FBI. This is one of the real problems with the unholy connection between Israeli law enforcement and Western police forces. Frankly, I don't think there's anything a first world country can learn from the Israelis. So let's put it this way. Nothing good can be learned from them. Anyway, the Israeli deputy counsel Shahar Arieli claimed that the half-day session brought top-notch professionals from the Israeli police to share knowledge with their U.S. counterparts. It's unclear whether any of the officers involved in the incident in which Mr. Floyd was killed attended the conference, although I think the officer charged, or the first officer charged, had been on the force quite a while, so it's certainly possible. And the article goes on to, it's kind of chilling. But in a chilling testimony, a Palestinian rights activist said that when she saw the image of Derek Chauvin kneeling on Mr. Floyd's neck, she was reminded of the Israeli forces policing of the occupied territories. Yes, you know, it's not their land. It belonged to the Palestinians, Christian and Muslim. Netta Golan, the co-founder of International Solidarity Movement, said, when I saw the picture of the cop, Derek Chauvin, on top of George Floyd, by leaning on his neck with his knee as he cried for help and other cops watched, I remember noticing that when many Israeli soldiers began using this technique of leaning in on our chest and necks when we were protesting in the West Bank sometime in 2006. They started twisting and breaking fingers in a particular way around the same time. It was clear they'd undergone training for this. They continued to use these tactics. Two of my friends had their necks broken, but luckily survived. And it's clear that Israel, share these methods when they train police forces abroad, in crowd control, in the U.S. and other countries, including the Sudan and Brazil. Israeli training of U.S. police is widespread. The training of U.S. police by Israeli forces is widespread. Even Amnesty International was compelled to report that hundreds of police from Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, California, Arizona, Connecticut, New York, Massachusetts, North Carolina, Georgia, Washington State, and Washington, D.C. have been flown to Israel for training. This is almost incomprehensible. One of the, probably the most sophisticated nation in the world, the United States, sending policemen to Israel for training. It's grotesque. Thousands more are being trained by Israeli forces who have come to the United States to host similar events to the one held in Minneapolis. According to the somewhat selective rights organization, many of these trips are taxpayer-funded, while others are privately funded. Since 2002, the Anti-Defamation League, the American Jewish Committee's Project Interchange, and the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs have paid for police chiefs, assistant chiefs, and captains to train in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories. The Minneapolis Police Department was contacted for comment. apparently they didn't have a comment. I want to thank Linda for sending this my way, and I do find it, I find it shocking. Shocking, but not surprising. Draw a distinction. Now,
a good move earlier today by Maxime Bernier of the People's Party of Canada. Maxime has come out quite strongly in favor of declaring Antifa or banning Antifa. This is a letter I received from him. It's to many people. It's not absolutely personal, but do you remember the People's Party of Canada event on free speech with Dave Rubin in Hamilton last year? I sure do. There were clashes with a group of Antifa demonstrators who wanted to prevent us from entering the building. Some of them tried to stop an 81-year-old lady who was crossing the street with a walker. They were yelling Nazi scum at her. It was absolutely disgusting. These people are violent and uncivilized. They throw bricks at windows. They set cars and buildings on fire. They loot stores. They physically attack peaceful citizens. They are terrorists. Their goal is to destabilize society in order to impose a communist regime. For many years, they've been hijacking legitimate protests. They did it again this past weekend in the U.S. and in Montreal. The American government has announced it will designate Antifa as a terrorist organization and treat them accordingly. It's time we do the same thing in Canada, and I'm invited to sign a petition. So I'm going to read this petition. I haven't already read, but I'm going to read it to you. For many years, Antifa activists have been hijacking legitimate protests. They did it again this week in the U.S. and in Montreal. These people are violent and uncivilized. They throw bricks at windows. They set cars and buildings on fire. They loot stores. They physically attack peaceful citizens. They are terrorists. Their goal is to destabilize society in order to impose a communist regime. The American government has announced it will designate Antifa as a terrorist organization and treat them accordingly. It's time to do the same thing in Canada. Absolutely, and I'm going to put this up on the internet and try to circulate this good idea as widely as possible. Well, here is an opinion piece published yesterday, that's Tuesday, in the National Post. It was written by a columnist named Rex Murphy. And it really cranked the radical left in quite a way. Even some contributors to the National Post were so outraged they complained to the editor that this should never be published. Isn't it interesting? I don't agree with your point of view, and you should not have been allowed to express it. These are the new totalitarians. Anyway. One of them got to write a letter today, an article in the National Post that I will refer to it. But first of all, what caused them so much unhappiness? Rex Murphy, a regular columnist for the National Post, wrote, "Canada is not a racist country, despite what the Liberals say." To any fair mind, Canada is a mature, welcoming, open-minded, and generous society. It would be helpful if these Liberals kept the full story of this country in mind when discussing racism. For instance, we call her Climate Change Barbie, although that's not actually her name, Infrastructure Minister Catherine McKenna. She was the Environment Minister, God help us, prior to the election. Catherine McKenna recently retweeted a lovely picture of her and four other ministers taking part in social distancing kayak excursion in Ottawa. Oh, isn't that cute? Quote, "Nothing beats enjoying some time on the water with my colleagues," McKenna tweeted. "It's hard to argue. It sure beats spending time in Parliament during the COVID-19 and long-term care crisis." Rex Murphy said, anyway, he's absolutely right. But it wasn't the kayaking picture that originally caught my attention, Rex writes. It was another of the former environment minister's endless Twitter bulletins
commenting on the protests and riots. They are both, and mainly the latter, that's riots, now sweeping across the United States. Quote, as is Catherine McKenna, right now thousands, if not millions, are marching, fighting, and protesting for their basic human rights. Fighting? Well, it's supposed to be nonviolent. What are they fighting for? We need to acknowledge that racism and discrimination are a part of our reality here in Canada and around the world, and we all need to call it out. We have to do better, wrote McKenna, before a similar demonstration took place in Montreal on Sunday, which also ended in a riot caused by Antifa. Look at the just gut-wrenching guilt-mongering. We need to acknowledge that racism and discrimination are part of our reality here in Canada. Really? Well, yeah, actually, she's right about racism. It's anti-white racism. You know, if you're a Native Indian, the state will pay to send your kid to university, assuming he or she graduates from high school. If you're a Native Indian and you live on a reservation, you don't pay income tax or sales tax. If you're an Indian and live, you are exempt from most fishing and hunting laws. Is that your idea of equality? In mine, it's anti-white discrimination. And that, of course, is what is behind, or the reality, rather, of a policy that finds a lot of favor, certainly with big government, both some provinces and certainly the federal government. And that's a policy called employment equity. It kind of sounds nice, doesn't it? Employment equity. Employment equity is anti-white discrimination in hiring. It is deemed that certain groups are disadvantaged, or I would call them privileged. So there is often preference given to members of that group. And all the while, we're told this big lie that somehow we have white privilege. Well, we don't. But anyway, back to Rex Murphy's point. There's a picture there of the riot in Montreal on the weekend. Police pushed back protesters during a demonstration calling for justice in the death of George Floyd and victims of police brutality, or so they say, in Montreal. What's going on, Rex Murphy says, what's going on in the U.S. right now may have begun for some as a protest in support of basic human rights. But however it began, it has now morphed into scenes of pure violence, random attacks, arson, and something close to actual anarchy. It would have been good of the minister, climate change Barbie, it would have been good of the minister to have acknowledged the very troubling mixed nature of the events. Yet some people are engaging in legitimate protests, as is their right. But many of them have engaged in looting, mayhem, destruction of property, threats, arson, and deliberate confrontations, and in some cases, actual shooting of the police. Looking through news and social media reports online, one can easily find scenes of individuals being furiously beaten by some of the mob. A police precinct abandoned to flames, and I mentioned that last night, the shameful decision by the mayor of Minneapolis to basically let the feral mob destroy the third precinct. A small store destroyed right in front of us, of its owner, and the attempted arson of the historic St. John's Church in Washington, D.C. St. John's is a revered institution, because every U.S. president since James Madison has attended services there. I'm not sure how attempting to burn down a church, which is also a national symbol, figures under the banner of protesting for human rights. It was very good of Donald Trump on Monday night to walk across the lawn, not too far from the from protesters, and stand in front of St. John's Church and make a statement about being a law and order president, saying that he supported the rights of people to peaceful protest. That's often not remembered in the almost non-stop excoriation of Donald Trump that's occurred since. But he did say that. But he also said he was the law and order president, and he was going to, he was urging the weak-willed, not all, but some weak-willed governors and mayors to enforce the law, and he added that if they didn't, he was prepared to go all the way to bringing in the military to preserve what his constitutional obligation is to preserve, and that is law and order. This isn't a Donald Trump thing. This isn't something he's made up and decided, I'm going to be the law and order president. He doesn't have a choice. That is his job. And it's actually also the job of mayors of cities and governors of states. And the night before, some in the mob of feral extremists tried to set St. John's Church on fire. It's damaged. Now, as an example of the absolutely gut-twisting, sick white guilt, the female bishop of, I believe that she's Episcopalian, the female bishop of Washington, D.C., denounced the president for having used her church. He actually didn't use her church. He appeared out in front of it. which is his right to be on the street in the United States of America. Even more so, the church is supposed to be open to all. Not that he actually went inside, but isn't it? Or, well, Donald Trump need not apply. Absolutely disgraceful. Anyway, back to Rex Murphy. The second part of McKenna's tweet, quote, "We need to acknowledge that racism and discrimination are a part of our reality here in Canada and around the world, and we need to call it out," was more troubling to me because it's yet another example of liberal leveraging a situation happening somewhere else to create an opportunity to lecture Canadians. And boy, you can take that to the bank. In dissecting her statement, it would be helpful to have some more details. How much are racism and discrimination actually a part of Canadian reality? Are they overwhelmingly present? Are they, in McKenna's view, a central part of Canadian life? Where do they manifest themselves? Are some provinces more racist and discriminatory than others? If any of the answers to these questions is yes, then we have a far bigger problem than COVID-19. Another question. Is it only those in the higher echelons of the Liberal Party who have a clear view of all this racism and discrimination? Indeed, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has spoken in such terms. You know, they are the knowledgeable ones, you see, the left libs. He said, many Canadians of diverse backgrounds are watching, like all Canadians are, the news out of the United States with shock and with horror, he said up front. I don't know, really? I can agree with most of that, though I don't know why he made a distinction between Canadians of diverse backgrounds and all Canadians, since there are not two sets of us. But he then proceeded, as McKenna did, into a lofty declaration of virtuous moralism, saying, anti-black racism is real. It's in the United States, but it's also in Canada. On one level, there's nothing to dispute here. No society is without bigotry. None. But how big a problem is it here in Canada? That's the question. Ask Rex Murphy. Most Canadians, the vast majority, in fact, are horrified by racism and would never participate in it. We are not, in fact, a racist country, though to say so may shock some. Do we have welcoming immigration policies? Are our largest cities not a great montage of people from every corner of the world, of every color and creed? Do we not, both in private and public, celebrate Canada's multicultural nature? Do our schools not press the ideas of tolerance and acceptance toward all people and all faiths from kindergarten through high school? Is it not a doctrine of Canadian civic life that to end any trace of discrimination or racism is a cardinal rationale for the very existence of modern Canada? He's right about all these, although well,
certainly modern Canada, at least the left lib establishment, greatly prides itself on non-discrimination. Although it's got to be pointed out that don't overdo that. There's non-discrimination against minorities. There's plenty of discrimination against white people. And Max, Rex Murphy goes on to say, in fact, to give Canada credit, it has for decades now worked in every venue, from corporations to the public service to the arts and universities, to set goals and standards designed to eliminate pernicious bigotries. It is therefore strange that after so much honest effort, so many advances in public thought and practice, so great a march from those times past when racism and bigotry were indeed rife and accepted, that an inventory of how far we have come is never taken, that the advances remain unacknowledged or unspoken, and that citizens hear so often from their betters how racist and discriminatory we are. Well, that certainly is true, that we're always hearing that. To any fair mind, Canada is a mature, welcoming, open-minded, and generous society. It would be helpful if these liberals kept the full story of this country in mind when discussing racism, and not leap so reflexively to grim characterizations of a country that, while not perfect, has been doing its best to be tolerant and welcoming. Now, you know, I noticed this column, and I thought, well, you know, I don't agree entirely with it. I think it's actually rather squishy, and I don't think we ever were, in the common sense of the word, a racist society. But he makes a good point. But that has unleashed just a firestorm of rage on the social media. And people denouncing Rex Murphy as a privileged 73-year-old white male, as if, we're not supposed to discriminate, right? But his very whiteness and his age somehow disqualify him or taint his point of view. And just white hot rage. Today, the National Post devoted half a page to fiery letters, all of them denouncing Rex Murphy and saying he just doesn't know what he's talking about, that they don't know the struggles people have had, and racism, racism's everywhere. And when I see the last names of some of these people, I've got to ask, well, you know, if it's such a gosh darned horrible racist country, why don't you go home? Anyway, one who was in full flight today was a woman by the name of Vanmala Subramanian. That's Vanmala Subramanian. She is a Tamil. And she was, it's a long article, I won't go through all of it. Canada's not racist? Do your homework. Rex Murphy, the conservative commentator, former CBC radio host, and a 73-year-old white man, is convinced that racism does not exist in this country and that the vast majority of Canadians would never participate in it. Well, I think he's right. If by racism you mean being nasty to another person because of their race, calling them black and nigger or to his face, or denying him service. No, I think the vast majority of Canadians wouldn't be part of anything like that. Earlier this week, in a column published in the newspaper I work for, she works for the National Post, Murphy explicitly wrote that Canada is not a racist country, acknowledging that the statement might shock some. His arguments, so she goes over some of his arguments. She points to one or two incidents where blacks were detained by police, there may have been an excessive force used. Nobody was killed or injured. And one of the practices that has been very controversial for the the anti-white crowd, is police carding. And what that is the police will stop. They have a mental profile of people who are likely to engage in crime. And that would be primarily young black males. So they will approach one on the street and simply ask for identification. They're not under arrest. And actually, I don't believe they even have to give an ID if there's nothing else, no other problem. And what the police trying to do is to keep track of people and also kind of send a message, we're watching. Now, people, the argument against that is, but I've done nothing wrong. And that may well be. Well, then why target black males? Well, because black males commit a wildly disproportionate share of crime in the United States and in Canadian cities where, like Toronto and Montreal. So, intelligent policing, or at least according to this strategy, intelligent policing says, well, we'll devote our resources to kind of keeping an eye on the people who are more likely to commit crimes. Does that mean every young black male is a criminal? Of course not. Or every young black male is about to commit a crime or has committed a crime? No, of course not. Okay, well now she's, and that's the reason some blacks are stopped and they have done nothing wrong. And usually if they behave themselves, they go on their way. There's no charges, they're not put in jail. Well, as further evidence of just the horrible racism of Canadian society, this Sri Lankan, what's her name again, Vanmala Subramanian, says, beyond simply being factually wrong, she claims, propagating the notion that Canada is no longer racist is dangerous and damaging because it only serves to reassure white people and white-dominated systems in this country that their work is done and that they can revert to a state of comfort knowing that their corporate boards are dotted with a token number of visible minorities and their employees are apparently free of racist ideals thanks to set rounds of diversity training. Well, yeah, I mean, you're propagandized endlessly about the merits of diversity, and whites are often intimidated in the workplace to express no opinions, lest they be taken the wrong way and violate. The corporations are complete whores in playing into the diversity thing. Oh, I read annual shareholder reports, and company after company pats itself on the back about its commitment to diversity. In fact, diversity is their greatest strength. I think, maybe that's why the shares are doing so poorly. Anyway, the fact that there is non-white representation and female representation on most large corporate boards, well, that's only tokenism. Well, really? Non-whites represent about 22% of Canada. What do they want? 75% of a board of directors? Representation or a presence may make some sense. And in many companies, there is such a presence. But anyway, that's just brushed aside. But here is where, I love this name here, Vanmala Subramanian really gets down to a point that she thinks really zaps Rex Murphy. To Rex Murphy and all who share his deeply ignorant sentiments on race or have the immediate instinct to say Canada's not that bad. Well, I'll tell you who says that. Immigrants. How do I know? Because they don't go back. Now that the civil war in Ceylon or Sri Lanka is over, if this is such a gosh down awful racist country, why doesn't Vanmala Subramanian go back? hey, leave racist Canada and go back. Well, they never do. Because they know we're weak, and they know they can push us around and get even more. Okay, but here's her great point. She says, anybody who thinks Canada is not racist is not that bad. I say, spend a day in an Ontario criminal court to really understand how systemic racism can devastate lives, families, and completely dismantle communities of color. What does she mean? So if I attended a criminal court, I would see how systemic racism devastates lives, families, and completely dismantles communities of color. Well, what would I find in a criminal court in Toronto? I've been there on a number of occasions on free speech matters. Well, you see an awful lot of accused who are black, way out of their proportion of the population. The proportion in Toronto is about 7 or 8%. Now, how does that show systemic racism? Well, it could mean police just charge black people because they're black. All right, suppose that were true. Well, don't forget, our justice system is very liberal. We've had liberal lefty governments and lefty-minded people in power for 50 years. We have a judicial system that is riddled with cultural Marxists. Now, these are not conservatives, anti-black, anti-minority people, just the opposite. So, okay, even if police just wantonly charge black people and they appear in court, would they then just be wantonly found guilty just because they're black and then sentenced to prison just because they're black? Well, no. To believe that is to believe the preposterous. Blacks are overrepresented in the courts, and you could see that if you visit a criminal court in and around Toronto, because they commit a disproportionate number of crimes. Of course, not every black charged is guilty, and maybe some who are guilty are not convicted. But most of those, the vast majority of those who are convicted and sent off to jail, are convicted for having broken serious laws. I'm not sure what Subramanian's point is. And she says that systemic racism devastates lives, families, and completely dismantles communities of color. No, it sends convicted criminals to prison. How does that devastate families? Well, I'm sure it's not good for a family if a member of that family is sent to prison, I guess. Or, as sometimes happens, a person who is the father of several children by several different mothers is sent to prison. But I guess the criminal justice system is devastating the families and communities. Okay, let's flip it around. What would she suggest? If you're if you are accused of a crime and you're black, let you go. Or if you're convicted of a crime, oh well, let you go. I mean, is that what she means? See how the judges behave, the way they prejudge black people or people who can't speak English, the way they discount poverty, mental health, and the trauma of war when sentencing people of color, punishing them with jail time and criminal records that pretty much guarantee unemployment for life. That too is BS, unemployment for life. So she's saying that the judges, she claims, and I doubt that that's true, discount poverty, mental health, and the trauma of war. Which kind of makes you wonder, why are we bringing, you know, if that's true, why are we bringing people like that to this country? I mean, if they're that damaged, is it really a good move on our part? Anyway,
She was really quite esteemed.
Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me, and I'm going to have a
few songs by Randy Travis. A great balladeer, is a fantastic voice, very religious man. Randy Travis, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
You may think that I'm talking foolish. You've heard that I'm wild and I'm free. You may wonder how I can promise you now. This love that I feel for you always will be. You're not just time that I'm killing. I'm no longer one of those guys. As sure as I live, this love that I give is gonna be yours until the day that I die. Oh baby, I'm gonna love you forever. There's no from the bedroom. I smell perfume, my favorite kind you wore, and it brings back memories of all those nights behind our bedroom door. And the saddest thing I think I've ever seen was my closet all cleaned out. It's sad to think that one must leave, 'cause we can't work things out. There's no place like home. There's no I'm staring at her photograph, losing my mind, going back in time to 1982.
The way we did when our love first began.
tell me that you've missed me too, that you've been so lonely, and you've waited for the day that I'll return. And we'd live in love forever, and that I'm your one and only. Or would you say the table's finally turned? Would you say I told you so?
Randy Travis, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me, back with you again tomorrow, and I sign out tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our coast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our great fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever.